Several years ago I was attending a university in the Northwest. While I was doing so I received several of Edgar Steele's conspiracy pen pal missives. I still read them, I just go to his website at rather than receive them, as an email. In any case, during that time I acquired one of Mr. Steele's better known sayings and kind of adopted it as my own. My essay, "It Asks the Jews Stupid," was not as original as I thought when I wrote it. Mr. Steele wrote an excellent essay several years ago with the same title, and it seems that I must have liked it so much that I began to use the phrase, "It Asks the Jews Stupid," and embraced it as my own. In any case, the statement, which will precede my essay on my BLOG site, from this moment on is my attempt to remedy this usurpation of his prose/ideas, and to give him the attribution he deserves. Mr. Steele was very kind about all this. I wrote him, and he asked if I was the one that had written an essay with the same title as his. I realized at that point what must have happened, i.e. I read his essay in 2004, and accidentally appropriated his title. I apologized, and he graciously accepted my apology. I highly recommend his essay, "It Asks the Jews Stupid." It is an excellent expose as to how our friends the Jews conduct themselves in this day and age, and how we goyim allow them to get away with their bad behavior. "It Asks the Jews Stupid," by Kurt Maynard. I have long thought about writing this article, but hesitated because I didn't want the reader to conclude that I believe that all Jews are complicit in what amounts to a vast conspiracy to undermine Western civilization and establish a Talmudic-centered one-world government. However, times have changed, and I feel obligated to write this and post it on the last bastion of freedom of speech, the Internet, before even that, in its present form, is made unavailable to mankind. Of course all Jews aren't engaged in this nefarious plan, but unfortunately most of them will come to the aid of those who are. There are some exceptions. On occasion one will criticize another, but, as a rule, those who are in a position to publicly denounce one of their own are still pro-Israel/pro-Zionist in orientation. A Jewish conservative talk show host named Michael Savage recently condemned George Soros, a multinational Jewish supremacist, for engaging in the kind of activities that according to Savage led to the Holocaust more than 60 years ago. In a sense Savage is right. Soros is exactly the kind of Jew that inspired Germans to wake up and democratically elect Adolf Hitler. In 1933, the financial shenanigans Soros engages in today are pretty much the same thing German Jews were engaged in prior to the Second World War. Unfortunately, Savage can't be looked at as a role model for Jews either. He is a hardcore Zionist and an Israeli apologist, blindly towing the line for this little provocateur no matter what it does or whom it does it to. This little spat between Soros and Savage illustrates an important point, and one I intend to thoroughly expand on in the next few pages. Savage is allegedly a right-wing Jew and Soros is allegedly a leftist. Both are Jewish, both have a voice, both have a platform. Savage's is talk radio and Soros speaks through various organizations like MoveOn.com and whatever else his money and influence buys. You want to hear any non-Jewish critics of Israel on the radio, television, or on MoveOn.com? They have no voice, no platform, not in the mainstream media anyway. The networks have gotten to the point where when Israel and / Middle Eastern affairs are discussed, the experts and analysts are introduced, and they may as well be referred to as Jew number 1, Jew number 2, and Jew number 3. I can't tell you how sick it makes me when Fox News, the allegedly fair and balanced network, introduces Charles Krauthammer and William Kristol to their viewers, as if either could possibly offer an unbiased opinion when it comes to Israel and / organized Jewry. Both are in every sense of the word Jewish supremacists. Jews are today so overrepresented, so disproportionately prevalent, in just about every facet of American life, despite composing a very small numerical percentage of our population, that I no longer believe, as I once did, that most people aren't aware of it. Sure, there are a few, busily engaged in acquiring as much money as possible, or watching American Idol, or engrossed in video games and MTV, that they aren't fully awake, but in my opinion, for the most part anyway, those that deny the reach and omnipresence of Jewish influence in America today are either ignorant, delusional and/or complicit. One recent phenomenon that finally encouraged me to write, "It's the Jews Stupid," is this incredible short-sighted and moronic tendency to compare George Bush to Adolf Hitler, or to bring up George's grandfather's alleged relationship with the Nazis, and to somehow suggest that this alleged relationship proves Bush is himself as a Nazi. This ridiculous theory is advanced by the same folks that suppress the abundance of evidence implicating the Israelis, and a complicit and predominantly Jewish media, in what happened in NYC. And at the Pentagon, on 9/11, people, like Greg Szymanski, who by the way claims to live in a very small Idaho community known as Spirit Lake, but like his theories, this too is a lie, my mother lives in Spirit Lake, and Szymanski doesn't. Szymanski also loves to implicate a so-called black vote. In every nefarious incident that has occurred over the last several decades, I can't tell you who or exactly what this black vote is, as I don't bother to read Szymanski's crap. He is a moron and a crude propagandist who would like to misdirect his reader's attention to ludicrous ideas like Bush is a Nazi and/or a servant of this nebulous black vote. I have written Szymanski several times and pointed out to him that it's the Jews Stupid, but he refuses to respond to my missives, preferring instead to continue his pointless and misleading rants. I have since concluded that Szymanski isn't just a fool, he is a hired gun and agent provocateur, granted, not a very good one, but one nevertheless. So, some of you might ask, well, how exactly do you know Bush is not a Nazi? For anyone with the shallowest understanding of history, as it relates to the Second World War, this isn't much of a surprise. Sadly, most Americans are more attuned to their feelings of self-worth than they are history in general, so they may be more susceptible to believing concepts that are so erroneous that those with a rudimentary knowledge just disregard out of hand. Hitler sought to exclude Jews from German life, especially their representation in government, academics, and the German media, which was composed of newspapers, news magazines and radio. In those days there was no television, at least not available to the public, so this wasn't an issue. George Bush has appointed Jews to some of the most sensitive positions in the American government. Michael Chertoff is the Director of Homeland Security, a position that places him in a position to do pretty much as he likes with our national security apparatus. Chertoff is an ethnic Jew, and a dual citizen of the State of Israel. Hitler wouldn't have considered appointing a Jew to such a post, period. It wouldn't have happened, primarily, because the German people, the Nazi Party and Adolf Hitler were entirely cognizant of the fact that German Jewry had collectively done their best to destroy the German economy and German nation after the First World War. Does this mean that every German Jew participated in this treasonous pursuit, that every German Jew became wealthy at the expense of their non-Jewish German neighbors? Of course not, but like today in America, most Jews actively participated in covering up the crimes of their criminal co-religionists, which makes them complicit to a certain extent. One can see the same phenomenon at work today in America. Anytime anyone mentions that Jews are disproportionately represented in the United States government, in the American media, in academics, in the medical profession, in banking, which in fact they are met with a coordinated assault by an incredible number of Jews, most of whom aren't guilty of committing any actual crimes, who seek to silence them with various labels, i.e. anti-Semite, bigot, racist, etc. One hears many excuses for this cohesive support, which only enables the criminals, fear of anti-Semitism, and/or fear of the next pogrom or Holocaust. Unfortunately for collective Jewry, this excuse doesn't wash what they are doing, and what the Germans knew they were collectively doing in 1933, and what Americans are slowly becoming aware of now, is aiding and abetting their co-religionists to commit crimes that are tantamount to treason. In 1933 the German nation democratically elected a leader that promised them he wouldn't allow this absolute and empirical reality to continue. George Bush, on the other hand, chose a Jew named Bernanke to replace another Jew named Alan Greenspan as the head of the Federal Reserve, a position that is without question perhaps one of the most powerful and influential positions in government today. In the words of Joseph Goebbels, if Hitler were to have done something like that after the German people had suffered through a decade of hyperinflation and the deprivation so associated, the German people would have boxed their ears. The fact is, George Bush is not a Nazi. He is not in the least sympathetic with nationalism, let alone National Socialism. He is without a doubt the most philo-Semitic president that has ever sat in the Oval Office period. Adolf Hitler sought to ostracize Jewish troublemakers. Bush seeks to make them his most influential foreign and domestic policy advisers. As Bush himself would say, make no mistake, our commander and chief is not critical of Israel, or the disproportionate amount of influence Jews in the United States wield. He is their friend, their ally, and in the end, more concerned about their interests, and he is in the interests of his own nation. There are those that would seek to convince you, and I, that Bush is a Christian fundamentalist, and it is for this reason that he supports Israel and Jews with such vigor, but this too is a chimera. Bush is an opportunist, not an ideologue. He has no loyalty to anything beyond himself and his own business interests. Goebbels was somewhat of a prophet pariah. He understood organized Jewry, like few Americans do today. He understood that their collective calls of anti-Semitism directed at the Nazi leadership, and indeed the German people themselves, was a technique they had successfully used, even perfected, in order to advance their interests, while at the same time suppressing any dissent from the genteel majority. We see the same technique at work today, all around the world. Any time anyone honestly divulges the actions of a Jew in some crime, they are immediately smeared with the label of anti-Semitism. This is not a recent phenomenon. It has nothing to do with Zionism, as Noam Chomsky might suggest. It is an ageless technique developed by Jewry over an extended period of time, as evidenced by one entry Goebbels made in his diary during the Second World War, more than 60 years ago. The Jews in England now demand laws to protect them from anti-Semitism. We know these tactics from our own past, when we were struggling for power. I didn't help much. We were always able to find loopholes in the law. Besides, anti-Semitism cannot be eradicated by law, once it has taken root with the people. A law against hating Jews is usually the beginning of the end for the Jews. Goebbels also noted in his diary an inevitability that will catch up with Jewry once again, an inevitability that has caught up with them in the past, one they cannot seem to escape entirely, and one that should motivate any sane Jew to seriously reconsider their relationship with the so-called Jewish State of Israel and its blatant disregard for what the majority of the people in the world want, and that is to live free of the Jewish yoke, whether that yoke be of an economic nature and/or one of a socio-political cultural character. In the following entry Goebbels notes something that is becoming evident today. Many Jews are becoming aware of the fact that non-Jews are beginning to scrutinize some uncomfortable facts that implicate Jews as being behind a great deal of the issues that most affect them. This is getting harder to cover up. People are beginning to notice that Jews are disproportionately represented in the areas of life that the non-Jewish majority is most concerned with, and that is the degeneracy of Western culture, the degeneracy of American culture, the degradation of Christian values, the collapse of the American educational system, and the rape of our economy. In their haste to cover up their involvement in these areas, Jews are exposing themselves, as they never have before. And because of this, Americans now know that Jews dominate Hollywood, the media in all its facets, our economy, our judicial process, and in many respects our very government. Once again, this is nothing new. Jews had attempted the very same thing in Germany, after the First World War, and in France, and in Poland, and in Spain. In fact, ethnic Jews have been tossed out of more countries, not for their faith, as they allege, but because of their collective behavior, than any other ethnic group in history. Despite what your history professor will tell you about their ejection from Spain under Ferdinand and Isabella, it had nothing to do with the fact that they weren't Catholic, and everything to do with their behavior. They intentionally enslaved the Spanish people under their usurious yoke. They absolutely, without any doubt whatsoever, ushered in the Moorish invaders from Africa. And, as a result, they unquestionably committed treason, and the Spanish people knew it. It is for these reasons and no others that the Jews were ejected from Spain, and you can bet there wasn't a Moorish type to be found among the Spanish victims. Bearing this in mind, carefully consider the words of Joseph Goebbels. The Jews aren't always so clever as they would like themselves to believe. Whenever they are in danger, they prove to be the stupidest devils. Goebbels was, of course, correct, contemporaneously, and in a modern sense, as well. Organized Jewry has in fact become desperate. They expose themselves completely on 9/11, and if the media were in other hands, their fifth column would long ago have been neutralized, and the war on terror ended. If it were not for the fact that the entire media apparatus was kosher, Americans would know that 150 Israelis were arrested in the United States following 9/11 for espionage, and then quietly deported, without informing the American public, by the Jew and dual Israeli citizen Michael Chertoff, who was at that time Assistant Attorney General, under the flunky John Ashcroft. If it weren't for the fact that the media is in a virtual and very Jewish stranglehold, Americans would know that five Israelis were arrested on 9/11, after they were witnessed filming the impacts of the airliners into the World Trade Centers, while laughing, joking, and clapping one another on the backs in a congratulatory manner. These Israeli Jews were also deported back to Israel, without informing the American people that they had even been arrested, let alone what their behavior was purported to have been. If it weren't for the complicit media and government, not to mention the corrupt judicial system, Americans would be familiar with the empirical fact that on January 2, 2004, an Israeli Jew named Asher Carney was arrested for having sold past tense more than 60 nuclear weapon detonators to Pakistan, the world's most unstable Islamic Republic, and a country in which Osama, as in Osama bin Laden, is the most popular name for a male child. If the American media wasn't under the direct control of Jews, the American people would know that an American Jew named Yehuda Abraham was arrested in 2003 for conspiring to sell Russian-made surface-to-air missiles to undercover FBI agents posing as Al-Qaeda operatives, with the understanding that these missiles would be used on American civilian airliners in the continental United States. The fact is, we don't know whether the above-named Jews are in fact Zionists, or even sympathetic with the Zionist cause, but we do know they are ethnic Jews, and we know their names, identities, and actions are being hidden from the people of the United States with the express intent of deceiving Americans into believing that Israel is their ally. It's the Jews, stupid. It doesn't matter whether Jews appear to be leftists, like Ilan Dershowitz or Noam Chomsky, or whether they appear to be right-wingers, like former leftist David Horowitz, or Michael Savage, or Norman Podhoretz, William Kristol, or Charles Krauthammer. They inevitably are intent on advancing what cannot be considered anything other than Jewish interests. Concepts like liberalism and conservatism are nothing more than angles to them to be manipulated and mastered for the advancement of Jewish interests as a collective whole. A perfect example of this incestuous predilection is how Jews, on both the right and left look upon the criminal oligarchs of Russia, and their criminal acquisition of Russia's entire infrastructure, in the 1990s, for pennies on the dollar. The Russian people, led by their president, Vladimir Putin, have recently indicted several Jewish oligarchs for this monumental theft. Most of the indicted have escaped to refuse in Israel and / or Britain. Nonetheless, their assets in Russia have been appropriated, rightfully it might be added, and their ill-acquired fortunes have suffered as a result. So what does organized Jewry do? They pull every string they can. They exert their unbelievable collective influence upon various members of Congress in an effort to get them to condemn the Russian government as anti-democratic. They compel President Bush to support the condemnations. They lobby anyone and everyone they can in an effort to enable these Jewish thieves to retain their stolen monies and property. You won't see any articles written by Jews condemning the oligarchs for stealing billions from the Russian people, but you'll see plenty of articles written by Jews condemning Putin and the Russian people for protesting the fact that they have been ripped off. We don't really know if these oligarchs are Zionists and / or sympathetic to the Zionist cause. We do, however, know that they are ethnic Jews, and that they quickly became capitalists, despite having lived in a communist country for the majority of their lives, after the collapse of the USSR. Fortunately, we know today that the oligarchs of Russia were financed by ethnic Jews in America, and that their primary apologists today are the very same American Jews. So once again, despite the smoke and mirrors of the all-too-predictable boogeyman of Zionism, it's the Jews stupid, not their latest ISM. Leonard Lieberman, vice president of Clear Channel Communications, one of the largest if not the largest corporate owners of radio stations across the United States, launched a billboard advertisement campaign in California a year or so ago, which claimed that Los Angeles was in Mexico, not California. The reaction was predictable. Millions of Americans reacted negatively to the billboards, immediately demanding that they be taken down, which predictably led to catcalls of racism, and then the media just as predictably brought forward all kinds of pro-Mexican radicals that claimed California was part of Mexico, and those that disputed this claim were racists. Hispanic frontmen for Lieberman and spokespeople for Clear Channel insisted that only racists wanted the signs taken down and stated against all opposition that the signs would remain up, and for about a week they did. Initially, the reactionary American population blamed Mexicans and Hispanics. It was only after an extensive internet investigation that the facts came out. A Jewish vice president of Clear Channel named Leonard Lieberman was the brains behind the advertising campaign and had ordered the signs erected. Once this information was posted on the internet, the signs immediately came down, overnight in fact. The media dropped the entire matter, and not another word about the billboards has since been heard on American airwaves. Lieberman probably isn't a leftist radical, considering that he is the vice president of a large American capitalist corporation. We don't know whether or not he is a Zionist, but we know he is a Jew, and we can see by his surreptitious behavior that he was far more interested in fomenting division than he was in creating unity. The fact is, organized Jewry is the main impetus behind both legal and illegal immigration into Western nations. Those that dispute this absolute fact are once again either stupid, delusional, and / or complicit. Jews love to play all sides. As a matter of fact, they are masters at it. By doing so, they hope to control the agendas of any organizations that might one day challenge the established kosher order. Remember Cindy Sheehan? Ms. Sheehan is essentially a leftist who got it right when she sent a letter to a major news network stating that her son joined the army to protect the United States of America, not Israel. Her fame grew exponentially just preceding that letter, and in its immediate aftermath she showed up at Bush's ranch in Texas demanding to see the traitor. All of the networks provided coverage, but someone got to Cindy and convinced her to retract her statement concerning Israel. And as a result, she has been marginalized since. Sure, the Jewish media throws her a bone every now and again, but she'll never recover the momentum she had in the summer of 2005. She has since been relegated to speaking at Unity-type churches, where the Jews can keep their eyes on her at all times. The entire immigration fiasco in America today is completely dominated by ethnic Jews. They ensure that no restrictive legislation is made into law, and when individuals like the Minutemen form into groups and become a little too popular, they start cranking out the media propaganda and the alt-common denunciations of bigotry and slash, or they get their frontmen, people like George Bush, to accuse the Minutemen of vigilantism. Fortunately, few Americans take that fool seriously any longer. They have basically pegged him for what he is, a damnable traitor. So how do the Jews accomplish all this? Consider the following. The Jewish-Latino relationship is now viewed as an absolute priority for our Jewish community, said American Jewish Committee Washington, D.C., Area Director David Bernstein. We see them Hispanics as increasingly active politically and more willing to work with coalition partners in achieving our collective goals. The phenomenon has been emerging in the last 5 to 10 years. Groups such as the American Jewish Committee and the Jewish Community Council have been forming coalitions with organizations such as the National Council of La Raza and the League of United Latin American Citizens. No doubt organized Jewry would love to cultivate this relationship. It would be good for Jews, albeit devastating for Hispanics. After nearly 80 years of exploitation, the black community has finally managed to semi-extricate itself from the parasitic grip of organized Jewry. If in fact this relationship between Hispanic and Jewish groups develops further, there is no doubt whatsoever that the relatively harmonious relationship between Hispanics and whites enjoyed today will end, and become just like the seething, resentful, and negative relationship between the American white and black communities. The black community has been so exploited by Jewry over the last 80 years that they may be beyond recovery as a viable group in the United States. This is indeed to say that Jews have just focused on African Americans. Oh no, they have victimized and stigmatized every black man and woman, and they have done so by convincing these blacks that the Jew is their only ally and friend. They then turn around and use the black race as a scapegoat for Jewish crimes, just as they have successfully done post-Katrina, when the heat was on the Israelis and the Jewish media in regards to the Iraq War. Along came Hurricane Katrina, and the displacement of a group of blacks so degenerate and handicapped by being third and fourth generation welfare recipients that no white person in their right mind would want them as neighbors. Yet the Jews came out in force, doing their best to relocate these blacks in the most unlikely of white regions, i.e. Utah. That for months white America had its mind on little else other than the depravity and ignorance of many of these near savages from New Orleans and ways in which to keep them out of their neighborhoods. Result: few were focused on what Israel was doing in Palestine or what was happening in Iraq and Iran. So how do the Jews exploit their relationship with minorities? David Horowitz was once a fairly well-known Jewish leftist in the 1960s and 1970s. He has since converted to neoconservatism, which isn't that much of an ideological leap. Believe it or not, the neocons are really nothing more than left-leaning Trotskyites with an alleged right-wing foreign policy outlook, which is just another way of saying they support the state of Israel even at the expense of their host country, the United States of America. In any case, Horowitz wrote an autobiography a few years ago. In it he tried to explain to his former leftist-oriented readers how he came to reject the socialism he once advocated and instead embraced the neocon Reed Jewish supremacist agenda. His autobiography is entitled Radical Son. It isn't very good, but fortunately Horowitz admitted to a few things that make writing this paper much easier. Consider the following passage, and then bear in mind that organized Jewry has denied a leading role in directing the agenda of radical black organizations. talking to Huey Newton, a well-known black radical, as a kind of equal, emboldened me to raise yet another difficult issue. A strain of anti-Semitism had developed in the party, the Black Panther Party, during the years E. Newton was in prison. Of course, the Panthers were not alone among black radicals in their attacks on Jews. In 1966, Stokely Carmichael and the leaders of the SNCC had expelled whites from the Civil Rights Organization, accusing them of being a fifth column inside the movement. Since Jews were a near majority of the whites in these organizations and had played a strategic role in organizing and funding the struggle, it was clear to everyone that they were the primary target of the assault. This was underscored by the support that Carmichael and the black left gave to the Arab states during their 1967 attack on Israel. Unfortunately, most people aren't aware of the fact that Israel preemptively attacked the Arab states on June 5, 1967, not the other way around. This is what I would refer to as kosher revisionism, and it is quite common in the world today. As a matter of fact, it's the norm. Historical revisionism has developed a bad name primarily because kosher revisionism rules the airwaves, radio, and television. Ethnic Jews have a near monopoly on the media in all its forms, and for that reason, lies like Horowitz's go unnoticed by most people. Horowitz predictably sets up his admission, i.e., that Jews were disproportionately represented in the black civil rights movement by first prostrating himself in such a way as to fool the reader into believing that he, Horowitz, was only able to influence Newton because Newton, the black man, in the relationship, felt that Horowitz was an equal. Many people will laugh at the very idea that a Jew would consider any black to be an equal. As a rule, Jews loathe blacks more than they do whites, but they find that exploiting blacks is advantageous to the advancement of their agenda, and it is for this reason, and no other, that they associate with blacks. Later in his autobiography, Horowitz again reinforces the above lie by reiterating it, but in a slightly different manner, but doing so with the same goal in mind, to convince his reader of a lie, i.e., that the Arabs attacked the Israelis in 1967, and to simultaneously smear Arab/Muslims in general. I began to review events of the past to which I had paid little attention before, like the expulsion of the Jews from the civil rights movement in 1966. Jews had funded the movement, devised its legal strategies, and provided support for its efforts in the media and in the universities, and wherever else they had power. More than half the freedom riders who had gone to the southern states were Jews, although Jews constituted only 3% of the population. It was an unprecedented show of solidarity from one people to another. Jews had put their resources and lives on the line to support the black struggle for civil rights, and indeed two other sons, Schwerner and Goodman, had been murdered for their efforts. But even while these tragic events were still fresh, the black leaders of the movement had unceremoniously expelled the Jews from their ranks. When Israel was attacked in 1967 by a coalition of Arab states calling for its annihilation, the same black leaders threw their support to the Arab aggressors, denouncing Zionism as racism. Once again, the Israelis preemptively attacked the Arabs on June 5, 1967, not the other way around. Horowitz isn't he confused? He knows this, but he is compelled to lie in order to fabricate history, a most common Jewish trait, and one they have only been able to get away with because of their strategic stranglehold on the media and the publishing industry. The fact is, Zionism is racist. It is inherently racist, far more so than anything of the old Jim Crow variety. Judaism itself is a racist religion. It's obvious enough. The entire foundation of Judaism rests on the idea that Jews are a chosen people, and the term people connotes race, and chosen connotes exclusivity. Put the two together, and you inevitably get racism. A no-brainer really, but an idea that Jews have successfully kept hidden from the goyim cattle. The fact is, The Jews have exploited blacks going all the way back to the early 20th century. They founded, developed and financed the NAACP, a fact that history and political science professors are still too scared to admit openly, but a fact nonetheless. At this point, let us get serious. Let us reject, at least momentarily, the knee-jerk reaction to dismiss what is written below based upon our emotional response to it. Let us consider carefully the facts, let us then consider what they might mean, and in the end, let us consider what the ultimate ramifications of these facts may be in our not-too-distant future. When I ask, for instance, what group, more so than any other distinguishable group, was responsible for the Bolshevik Revolution, and I then answer that question by saying, "It's the Jews, stupid, don't you reject it?" as an arbitrary response, it isn't arbitrary. It's an empirical fact, and one that can be easily proven if the reader chooses to cast aside his or her emotional response and to engage in a few hours of research. What distinct group has been ejected from more counties over the last two millennia than any other group? It's the Jews, stupid. What distinct group has led more radical subversive movements within their host nations than any other distinguishable group? It's the Jews, stupid. What group has consistently avoided military service, especially in the front lines, than any other group? It's the Jews, stupid. What group more so than any other has always had its patriotism questioned? It's the Jews, stupid. What specific ethnic/religious group more so than any other has consistently sought to ensnare and then exploit native populations under the yoke of usury? What ethnic/religious group dominates international finance? It's the Jews, stupid. What ethnic group dominates the media in Europe and North America? It's the Jews, stupid. What ethnic group dominates Hollywood? It's the Jews, stupid. What ethnic group has done more to subvert true scientific inquiry in the sciences than any other, embedding themselves in the disciplines of psychology, sociology, and anthropology, and doing so in such a way as to hijack them and completely and totally politicize them? It's the Jews, stupid. What ethnic group gave us multiculturalism and followed that up with an indoctrination program that reinforced this divisive farce by reaching right into our job place, homes, and schools via compulsory diversity and tolerance training programs and presentations? It's the Jews, stupid. Who brought us Judeo-Christianity, a concept that erroneously amalgamates two distinctly different and diametrically opposed religious and cultural views? It's the Jews, stupid. What ethnic group has done more than any other to identify itself as the only real victims of Nazi Germany and the Second World War? It's the Jews, stupid. What ethnic group has perpetrated one of the greatest frauds on mankind in the form of the so-called Holocaust? It's the Jews, stupid. This is an important point. Please see associated footnote. What ethnic group dominates the Russian mafia? It's the Jews, stupid. What ethnic group dominates the pornography industry? It's the Jews, stupid. What ethnic group is more responsible than any other for the ongoing sex slave trade? It's the Jews, stupid. Members of what ethnic group intentionally attacked an American ship in 1967 named the USS Liberty in what amounted to an act of war against the United States of America, and then used their co-ethnics in the United States to cover that fact up? It's the Jews, stupid. Members of what ethnic group sought to bomb American assets in Cairo, Egypt, in the 1950s, and blame it on the Arabs in an attempt to frame them and convince Americans to financially and militarily support the Zionist state? It's the Jews, stupid. What group more than any other has sought to undermine Christian values and Western civilization in an effort to divide and conquer? It's the Jews, stupid. What ethnic group was overly represented in the junk bond scandals of the 1980s? It's the Jews, stupid. members of what ethnic group were deeply involved in the Enron scandal, but were able to utilize the Jewish media's influence and access to the American mind in such a way as to nearly eliminate their role. It's the Jews, stupid. What ethnic group in America has mobilized itself through its organized efforts to force Americans to accept the continuing flood of illegal immigrants from the Third World? It's the Jews, stupid. Most recently manifested by the efforts of the ADL and the SPLC. This list could go on and on. It would require a tomb the size of Moby Dick to encompass the many crimes ethnic Jews have committed against Gentiles just in the last decade. The point of writing this isn't to convince readers that every Jew is deeply entwined in a plot to subvert Gentile society, but that Judaism is not a peaceful religion that seeks to coexist in harmony with non-Jews. The fact is, Judaism is first and foremost a supremacist religion that advocates the dominance of non-Jews. Unless Gentiles become aware of the fact that Zionism is nothing but Jewish supremacism's latest ISM, preceded in the past by many others, i.e. feminism, socialism, communism, and that these ISMs are nothing more than tactics used in a grand strategy to weaken our will and Western civilization itself, we'll never get to the heart of the problem at hand. We'll continue to fight wars for the Jews, to kill for the Jews, to arrest and incarcerate people for the Jews, to suppress the right to free expression for the Jews, etc., etc., ad infinitum. The time to liberate ourselves is now.